and welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and of course, on our podcast. I am AD Packham, and we are broadcasting in German-type precision in association with OldFootballShirts.com. Well, it's been a week of mixed emotions here on Planet Albion. Last Saturday's trip to Snake Mountain saw us leave deflated and looking over our shoulder as we succumbed to defeat to them. However, the mood was more buoyant on Tuesday as Spurs left the Amex with just a point towards their bid to finish second to champions Manchester City. Also this week, the club held its annual awards dinner on Thursday night, which saw Pascal Gross named as Albion Player of the Season. Recent Raw guest Danny Buett picked up the Women's Award, and Jose Escuerdo picked up the Goal of the Season Award for his Perler against West Ham. Joining me today as we look back on the last week is, of course, Alan Wes, and we're delighted to welcome back Marcus Hancocks. We're joined by Rev Chairman Mike Langridge, and we'll also hear from German commentator Ralph Gunesch. Now, Ralph is a former player who played for Mainz, St. Pauli and Ingolstadt, where he is currently assistant under-21 coach. Do we know anything about Ingolstadt, guys?
He got relegated last season, apparently.
Yeah, apparently they had a couple of hell of a player.
Yeah.
and it was that hell of a player who's just picked up the Player of the Season award. Marcus, beginning of the season when we did our pre-season predictions, you predicted that Pascal might be there or thereabouts before. Really, without really knowing much about him.
Yeah, just because he scored goals, which was always a useful addition in the Premier League. He obviously came with a top-flight pedigree. And generally, Germans tend to perform well, and they're very good, solid professionals. So I think it was, I thought even then it was an excellent signing with excellent pedigree. And so it's been proved, quite frankly.
Yeah, Mike, last season in the Bundesliga, he created the most chances and had the most assists of any player in the entire division, including those at Bayern Munich. And he kind of was... We'd never heard of him.
No, we hadn't. He's one of those that sort of came out of nowhere. Obviously, the club had had their eye on him for quite a long time. But he's done ever so well. He settled in really good. I believe it was a bit of a bargain price as well.
Yeah, I mean, pound for pound, would you say that he is the bargain of the season in this league?
It's possibly something we can put to sort of other people in Germany, but, because the prices over here are ridiculously inflated, the way they're even more ridiculously inflated in Paris. So I don't think it's actually fair to make that comparison. And we're actually back to that ridiculous notion of the transfer fee being, sort of,
Well, we're not talking about that per se. I mean, that proves the point. I mean, Mo Salah cost over £30 million.
No, but the point is, just because Pascal only cost £3.5 million, it doesn't mean to say necessarily. I think it's just the notion of sort of transfer fees being sort of an indicator of a player's quality actually sort of drives me around the twist, actually.
But I mean, especially as some of them don't even live up to that price tag. So I know what you mean. Big prices and they're a load of rubbish. So yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But he came in with no reputation over here. It was a very early signing, and so he had.
How many people have come from the Bundesliga with any reputation? Because anyone that's actually worth their weight in the Bundesliga has actually disappeared off to Madrid or to Barcelona or to Paris anyway. So,
well, this is it. I mean, I was thinking about this earlier, and out of players that are in their peak, and let's face it, Germany have had a few of those, but only really Klinsmann, Ballack maybe have come over. You've got Sané at Man City, who's a heck of a player.
There's been a few.
You've got Gundogan there as well.
Dietmar Hamann's come. I mean, you have to remember is that Germany still has probably the best national team in the world at the moment. I think if you go back sort of 10, 15 years, German national team was actually on its knees a little bit, and they had their big programme. We've talked about that in past rules and what have you. But, at the moment, to be a German footballer, it's actually way above the Albion's pay grade, if you're going to consider it that way. And the fact that we've actually picked up a relegation player from last season is actually, I think, more testimony to the...
Scouting team.
Thank you.
It was there.
Blank moment. More than anyone else. I mean, it's also probably testimony to the other clubs' scouting teams that they haven't got it. But he's also got to be. And whilst his stats might look great, it might be that other clubs just felt he didn't fit their style. Mm. And so the fact that Gross has fitted Houghton's style absolutely perfectly,
yeah, exactly.
It's just one of those things. It happens very rarely. But when you have that serendipitous moment of a player who's not expensive, who is available, who fancies coming here, fits in the system and works brilliantly, yeah, great. Knowing full well that you haven't had to pay, you know, if you're going to get one of the top, top players, you know they're going to do the business for you. The fact he was unknown, we're happy. It's just we're in a position to sort of blow raspberries at other clubs saying, ha, we got what you missed out on.
Yeah, there is a little bit of that, but I mean he was he's bearing in mind he has very little no pace really.
Doesn't need it.
He proved on Tuesday night. I mean that Croy term he did, and it was set up Dale Stevens.
Even that, yeah. When he's standing still, even that slow motion.
But he's been doing that.
Everything slow mo.
He's been doing that all season. Yeah. I'm surprised teams haven't got wise to it yet, quite frankly, because you know they'll know about it next season.
Well, sometimes,
but he's been doing it a lot because he's two footed, which again is for the scouting team. If you notice, he'll cross it with his left or he'll cross it with his right, and that's why he does those cross turns, because he's equally adept on each foot, which you know, which is a rare breed indeed of footballer.
Absolutely.
To be.
Okay. Well, earlier today I caught up with a chap called Ralph Ganesh, who is the he's actually a coach at Ingolstadt now, currently, and he's also a commentator on German television for the Premier League. Now, Ralph, you've pretty much do well. Is there anything you don't do? So you're an under 21 coach with Ingolstadt. You commentate on German on the Premier League in Germany. What else don't you do?
I'm really happy that after my career, I still can do a lot of things around football. Yeah, it's like continuing living a real dream. Earning money with things around football. So
yeah, because you used to play as well, didn't you? So you played for Mainz and you played for St. Pauli and you also played for Ingolstadt.
Yeah, I was a professional football player for around 15 years and I had to retire 3 years ago because of a bad knee injury. So yeah, now I changed the side.
Okay, so let's start with Pascal Gross then. He arrived here as an unknown quantity and he's just been voted as our player of the season. Is this a surprise to you?
Yeah, it is a surprise. I mean, I was very happy for him that he get the chance to play in the Premier League. It was all the time, it was my dream to play in England, but I couldn't make it. So, Pascal also was very happy and I was really, I couldn't say before the season what it will be a season for Pascal. So I think he made it very well, but it was also important that the team played, I would say, a good season. They stayed, I think, the whole season above the relegation. Is it right?
Yes, that's correct. Know. Yeah, no, it's not done just yet, but we are still above that dreaded dotted line. Yeah.
Yeah, but you stay above, and he had no injuries, and I think the coach was also very was confident to bring in a new guy, an unknown guy from Germany, let him play, give him a very important position in the team, and I think Pascal did it very well.
You said that he's unknown there, and he was certainly unknown to pretty much everyone in England, but our scouting department did a very, very good job there. And his stats in the Bundesliga last season really stacked up as someone who was the leading assist maker, who created more chances than any other player in the Bundesliga last year. So were you surprised that when Ingolstadt got relegated, that another one of the bigger German size didn't come in for him?
I wasn't surprised that none of the big German clubs wanted to have him, because Ingolstadt relegated to the second Bundesliga, and then you always have a big problem in for other clubs to be interesting, because in the cognition of the other teams, you are a guy who played for a team which was relegated, so he wasn't good enough for the first league.
Well, despite his history, it was creating more chances than any other player, including those at Bayern.
Yeah.
Wow, that's incredible. Now, for us, he's been involved in 14 of our 32 goals this season, which is incredible stats again. So he's just carried on where he left off there, hasn't he?
Yeah, but for me, it's only a result of his position in Ingolstadt. He had to play a little bit more in the defense, because he played in the center midfield too, but he had a lot of defense work to do. And I think in Brighton, please correct me if it's not right, but he plays more offensive behind the striker.
He's playing just behind Glenn Murray mostly. Yes.
Yeah. So it's easier for him to get straight to the goal and make some assists. That's for me the reason why he had 14 scorer points.
I mean, Glenn Murray.
His strength is the offense, definitely.
Okay, Glenn Murray actually went on record as saying that what do you put your success down to this season? And he turned around and said, Pascal Gross.
Yeah, he's a guy when he has a good connection to the striker. He knows how to play the balls. He sees the free spaces. He see what will happen in the next 2 or 3 seconds. And he has a very good right and left foot and can play a lot of good balls.
Yeah, obviously we're very delighted with him. And another player that joined us from Ingolstadt in the summer was Marcus Suttner. He's had not quite had the impact that maybe he would have hoped for.
I think it was very difficult for Marcus to to arrive very fast in Brighton. It wasn't such an easy transfer like Pascal's was. He had more problems get into the team. Like I said, with Pascal, if you start and you start being confident, and yeah, Marcus started with some problems. So yeah, it wasn't such a good season for him, like for Pascal.
I mean, that said, when he has played, we've been very delighted with him. We think his defending's been great. His set-piece delivery's been fantastic. He's just been very unlucky that Gaetan Bong's managed to keep him out of the side.
Yeah, but his movement to Brighton was very late, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, and that's one thing that Pascal's put some of his success down to, is the fact that he arrived so early. He arrived back in, it was our first signing in the summer. Now, I mean, pound for pound... he's been the critics over here are saying that he's probably the most successful transfer this summer. I mean, you look at people like Mo Salah and the amount of money that I mean, obviously he cost 30 million pounds.
Yeah, but I think Salah was quite more expensive.
Yeah, 30 million. So for 3 million pounds, and his stats is absolutely fantastic. But I mean, why do you think it is that that more German players don't come and test themselves in the Premier League?
I'm really sure if more English clubs would try to buy some German players, they would go.
It's as simple as that.
I only talk about the guys I played with in the past 15 years. And there have been a lot of guys who always said, oh my God, one of my biggest football dreams is to play in England. I don't think it's because the players don't want to. I think the scouting from the Premier League teams or Championship teams in Germany isn't so good or so developed like somewhere else.
Right, okay. Because I mean, obviously the blueprint that Germany has in terms of the national team is very, very successful. You know, we see time and time again the success that the German team has in international tournaments. So I mean, you would think that we would try and have more of those sort of players coming over to our teams.
I think the Premier League is actually on the right way. I know what you want to say, but. For being a strong or for getting a strong national team, you also need a strong league. Okay, you have a very strong league, one of the best in Europe. Some say Spain, some say the Premier League. That's not the topic now, but you don't have so many foreign players like you said before. Actually, in the last 2 years, I think there's a little change in the Premier League. Look at Tottenham, maybe. The Spurs, look at Liverpool. A lot of young players actually getting into the first team, playing really well. For example, Trent Alexander-Arnold in Liverpool. Mm-hmm. He played a fantastic quarterfinal in the Champions League. He played some fantastic games in the Premier League, especially against Man City. Maybe you've seen it.
Yes.
Rashford, Lingard, all the guys from Spurs. I think you will have a great national team in the next years. If all these young guys keep getting better and trying to force their development.
Okay, so with the Bundesliga then, I mean, it has pretty much become all about Bayern and then everybody else. Can you see a time when Bayern will be challenged again?
That's very hard. That's very hard. Bayern Munich is the best team since, I would say, 15 to 20 years. There have been 2 years around 2012 and 13, 11 and 12, when Borussia Dortmund challenged them successful, and they've been two times in a row they won the league. But Borussia Dortmund has a lot of problems at the moment. Leverkusen has a lot of problems. Leipzig has a lot of problems. Everybody said Leipzig will be the next challenger for Bayern Munich, but they played their first year in the Champions League this season and had a lot of problems in the Bundesliga. I don't think there will be a real challenger for Bayern Munich in the next years, because Bayern still get the best players, still get the best coaches.
Okay, so
it will be very boring in the next years.
Okay, but in the Bundesliga at the moment, currently you are using the VAR system, and that's come under a lot of scrutiny in the last week, so particularly with a game with one of your former sides, Mainz, against Freiburg. What happened?
you have to ask the referees, because nobody really knows what happened. First of all, before we start talking about the VAR, I have to say I'm not a big fan of the VAR.
I don't think anyone is.
We have a lot of them in Germany. Yeah, what happened in the last game? There was something in the box just a few seconds before the halftime whistle. It was hand, but the referee hadn't seen it, so he didn't blow the whistle, but he blew the whistle for the halftime. And on the way from the pitch to the locker room, he get a signal from his assistant referee in Cologne. Hey, stop there. There is something. Have to check it. Now, the big problem is in the rules. It says you only can change your decision if you are still on the field. In the television, you see that the referee left the pitch around 2 meters, so just two steps, but he wasn't on the field yet. The away team, Freiburg, they have been already in the locker room. So he gets the signal from Cologne, from his video assistant referee. Then he checked it on his monitor, which is beside the pitch. There was something in the box. He said, okay, oh, was my fault. I have to give a penalty. Then he went back, called both teams back to the pitch, and Mainz had his penalty, and they scored the first goal. So it was something between funny, unnecessary, don't know how to say, just please check the video on YouTube.
We've all seen it.
The decision is correct. It was hand. You had to give a penalty. But the way the decision was made, it was very strange. It wasn't very positive for the VAR.
Okay, well, let's just talk quickly about your former manager when you were at Mainz. Who was this particular gentleman?
It was Mr. Jürgen Klopp. I think everybody in the Premier League knows him now.
Yeah, so what are your opinions on heavy metal football?
I've been at Anfield Road in the game against Man City, and I really enjoy his kind of playing football, because and that's a big difference between German Bundesliga and Premier League. In the German Bundesliga, the teams are very good against the ball. In the Premier League, a lot of teams are very good with the ball. And especially Jürgen Klopp and Pep Guardiola are two coaches who always want to have the ball and who have a lot of ideas what to do with the balls. Yeah, when you have players like Salah, Mané and Firmino in the front row, you have to play fast on route one to the goal and try to score it, because these guys are unbelievable. I don't want to be a defender against one of these guys.
Okay, and just quickly before we finish, I mean, what has been the perception of Brighton both before this season and now in Germany?
We only knew that Brighton is now relegated or plays now in the Premier League. Nobody knows this club. There was a little bit more focus because Pascal went to Brighton, so you always look what your what your German players do in other leagues. And there was especially a focus on Brighton and Huddersfield because there were a lot of German guys and coaches in Huddersfield too. So these two clubs get it more. Yeah, they have been known in Germany, and we are, especially in Ingolstadt, we are very happy that Pascal played such a good season and hope they stay in the league.
And that was Pascal Gross's former teammate, Ralf Gennesch, in Ingolstadt. Right, boys, we went to Palace and we didn't come back with anything. Where do you want to start?
Please don't swear, Marcus.
Oh, do have to talk about that. I'm glad
can we
you
just
actually,
brush over this.
Yeah, I'm glad you called it Snake Mountain, which is correct. It's not Castle Grayskull, because Castle Grayskull is where He-Man lives, Mr. Andy Bass. It's Snake Mountain, which is where Skeletor lives.
How old
and
are
Skeletor
your
is the bad guy.
How old are your kids?
Well, they're 19 and 17, so they wouldn't know who
no,
He-Man is.
So how come you
do? Well, because I grew up listening to Masters of the Universe, because it was in the 80s.
It was actually you that had a go at me for saying it last week. So,
oh, did I? Yeah. Oh, well, there you go. So, and I'm right.
I feel there was a way of touch.
So, hang on, Castle Grayskull is the goodies.
Yes, right. That's where He-Man lives.
It's by the power of the Grayskull and then Elis's sword.
Yeah. Snake Mountain's where Skeletor lives.
Anyway, Baron Kyle was in for the suspended Davy Prepper, and Lacardia started in place of Solly March. It was a slow start. Palace were quick out the traps. Bong was sloppy and he conceded the corner. The kick was played to the apex of the box where Lacardia was lonely. And Milahovic fires in the shot which Ryan can only push into the path of...
That was, to be honest, that was the kind of defending that we saw in the with Dean in the fourth division.
Yeah.
I mean, it was that bad.
It was.
I mean, the fact that the fellow who was the fellow that got the shot across?
Milahovic.
Milahovic. His bread's very nice, but no, he just belted it across. I mean, even then, Ryan's parry wasn't actually that brilliant. I mean, don't get me wrong, I love Matty Ryan, and for the most part, he's been really, really good this season. It was just. Everything about that could have gone wrong with that goal went wrong. There was no one picking up the runner. The save was insipid. There was the fact that Izquierdo was actually started on the post where Zaha did his little tap-in. And by the time Zaha was there, he'd actually just wandered off and he was on the edge of the area. You just think, hang on, you wander off when the ball is cleared.
Yeah.
And actually, you did notice it, because where we were, myself and Ada were up in the press box, which where we had to do an awful lot of bobbing and weaving.
It was like boxer size.
Yeah, it was, because there's so many posts and stanchions and everything in front of you. At least you had a clear view.
Yeah,
sadly.
Yeah, unfortunately.
But we had to do it, you know, sort of moving your head that way and this way while you sort of look round one side of the post and round the other side of the post. So what the view that we got was just, you know, everyone was lying, everything was wrong, and it was just, you know. You can't actually think of, because if you actually then try and analyse it and say, okay, he should have done this, he should have done that, that's another show in its entirety. It was that bad.
Yeah. Well, at that stage, Palace were coming forwards in waves. I mean, and they were looking.
They were looking like
they were going to score. With
they
every
really
attack.
Wanted.
They wanted
I mean,
it more than we did.
Wanted it. Yeah.
Were you fearing the worst?
Yes. At that point, well, we went 1-0 down. And you kind of think, well, okay, all right, early goal, exactly what Palace wanted. You know, because it was 5-7 minutes. I think
it wasn't. It wasn't that late.
It was the second goal that you're going to come onto in a minute, no doubt. Yeah. Which at that point, you're thinking
Keystone Cops,
and then you think. At that point, we're in for a 5-0 again here. Yeah. This is not going at all to plan.
Well, that's one thing that really annoyed me, because on the match program they give away these artistic postcards as rip out on the back of it. One of which was the program cover from the 5-0 game.
Which
of course it was.
Of course it would be.
Which every Palace fan would like to send to an Albion fan. I'm sure
we're the Renf trophy holders, so eat that. No, it was. The thing is, it's one of those things that, you know, that kind of thing. I mean, even though it's 16 years ago now, it's something until such time as we actually get our own back on them.
Yeah.
And we had that perfect opportunity on the St Patrick's Day massacre to really actually turn the screw.
Did. Yeah,
it's funny. Funny you should mention that. I was trying to get David Lopez on the show today for today's show, but he'd only do it if he could do it in Spanish.
Oh, really?
Which would work
fine.
Really well.
Or just get Brian Owen on to do it. That's absolutely fine. That's fine. No, so the second goal was Keystone Copps.
Again.
And I think also one of the things that didn't help is that we had no ball retention. So any time we had the ball, I saw what we could see from where we were. Because it was actually, we were attacking the end to where we were sitting. Because we were diagonally across from where you guys were. Is that Lacadia and Izquierdo, for me, because it was kind of a 4-3-3-4-5-1 sort of thing. For me, they were on the wrong side. So Lacadia started on the left and Izquierdo started on the right. And there were times when Kyle would be bawling at Izquierdo because his attitude in the first 20 minutes was absolutely appalling. The fact he probably made up for it towards the end of the half with a goal, and we'll come to that in a bit, but he was just sort of just dangling his foot out, sort of putting in nominal tackles. And so when you're saying Palace were up for it, there were so many aspects of it where some Brighton players didn't seem to be.
Yeah.
It sounds like they were lost and not knowing what they were doing.
Yeah. Well, importantly, on 10 minutes, Dale Stevens picked up a yellow card. Then Ryan saved from Townsend. Palace went 2-0 up. And it was just too easy.
Two easy goals.
I've got an issue here because, I can see, I know why they're doing it. And this is modern football, okay? I mean, it's all about trying to play your way out of trouble. If you're in trouble, and you just put it into row Z, just clear your lines.
If you can't
play it out, don't just try and just clear your lines. Yeah. Don't concede the goal.
I can't work out. Remember, I mean, it's easier probably to describe a car crash than you could describe that goal because it was just kick, hack, wallop, hit someone, hit something.
Well, if you play the Benny Hill theme music over that defender, then you've got it.
Then you have, yeah. Yeah. Well, overall three, actually, but obviously we scored.
Yeah. Well, actually, there was five goals in that half, and only one was decent. So,
And then, it was just shocking. I mean, and Matt Ryan didn't cover himself in any glory there either. But I mean, he could have done a bit better. I mean, he said after the game, me and Ben Roberts will look at this and we'll go over it. And yeah, I know that I could have perhaps done better. Another comment after the game was interesting, which was from Shane Duffy, and he said he didn't know who to mark, which I would put down to Houghton, because we knew, most of us pretty much knew prior to the game that Benteke is rubbish and he wasn't going to start, and they played really, really well with Zahar and Townsend in the previous few games.
And Loftus-Cheek had a good game as well.
And that was what they were going to go with, so presumably they must have known that going in training all week, and they must have got to prepare for that. And Shane Duffy said, I had no one to mark, I didn't know where to go.
Houghton's
not beyond criticism sometimes, and yeah, I think you're right. I think it needs to be levelled at the manager there. If Shane Duff is coming out with something like that, then quite clearly Houghton and his team probably didn't do their homework, or it took him by surprise that Benteke wasn't on the team sheet. I don't know.
He's a public criticism of the manager, and you have to be a little bit careful with that kind of thing. I mean, it's fine, it's honest, it's great that we can get to hear that, but... You know, there'll be other time you say, hang on a second, sunshine, you know.
I'm sure he's probably
This wasn't straight after the match.
No,
though.
But even so, it doesn't matter when it was.
This is when he was talking about how much he prefers playing against someone like Harry Kane because he knows where he is and he can touch him.
But also, is he deflecting from the fact that actually, you know, to be honest, none of the defence had a good game at all anyway?
No, very poor. No,
I mean,
very
I did point, like Andy Naylor's comment just before the game started was it was bad news for the Albion because Benteke wasn't starting.
Yeah. Okay. 15 minutes in, Milahovic gets booked. Now, this was... didn't get picked up on Match of the Day or any of the highlights, but basically all the talk in the press room at half time was how Milahovic was actually still on the pitch.
Well, actually, it was him and Stevens.
Right. There is that caveat to it. But
to be fair,
Milahovic had three other tackles in the first half, but after he'd been booked, which if he hadn't have been booked, would have been a yellow card.
But I think you certainly say this to Dale Stevens, and in that sense, I mean, it's not as though the referee, I didn't think, was being particularly over lenient. I think he was actually in a fairly hostile atmosphere. I think he was actually having a very good game. I mean, yes, he missed a couple of bits and pieces, but he did well to keep 11 players on the pitch. Yeah. You know, Stevens was on thin ice.
Quite easily as well.
He was.
Hovis Bread was on thin ice. You know, so and there was a couple of times, you know, and let's fast forward to the second half here, and this was actually a decent bit, and this is where, and we're back to Zahar again, and this is it's just, is it typical of the man? I don't know. There was a thing that happened in the second half. He went to make out he was going to make a run and went smack straight into Bong, and there was a few verbals, and it made out that he was trying to make out that Bong had blocked his run. Referee, linesman, evidently didn't spot it. 10 minutes later, tries again, and it's again slightly off the ball. And with that, the linesman raises his flag, gives a free kick to Brighton for seeing this incident. So he's done exactly the same thing. And with that, Zahar comes over and gives the linesman an absolute mouthful of abuse. I don't know if it's actually the original foul or if it's the mouthful of abuse. And the point is he then carries on. So people are saying, oh, why did Zahar get booked? Because he was trying to actually get someone else booked.
Right, okay.
I think.
Fair enough.
Okay, we have a corner. Good. Grace finds the header dunk, whose header is hooked home by Glenn Murray.
Another poor goal, thankfully, in this instance.
It's actually, but we take it. And it was a decent, I mean, it was kind of a sort of on the line. I won't say tapping because he had to sort of hook it in, but yeah. It was a decent goal by Glenn, to be fair.
Yeah.
I was just interested in the Palace commentator, and yeah, goal scorer number 17, Glenn Murray. Goal by Palace, you know, Wilfred Zaha.
Yeah, that ridiculous call and response karaoke sort of crowd they have.
But I mean, that gave us hope that we're coming back into it at 2-1, and then shortly after that, they did get a third. Now, I mean, I'm laying my finger of blame entirely on the shoulders of Gaetan Bong here because he didn't complete his challenge.
And no, I'm completely blaming Scilotto because he completely lost Scilotto.
Yeah.
If you're actually seeking to exonerate Scilotto,
No, they're both right. Spanish, but basically Bong, he got his foot in, he made the interception, and then he stopped and he went backwards, and he had time to complete the clearance and carry on the ball, and the ball just went out to Milahovic. No one pressured the ball, and he had time and space to put it exactly where he wanted to. He was in acres. No one was near Milahovic when he put that ball in.
Yes, but Scilotto still should have defended it.
Yeah, he should have done. Yeah, but you've got to. But if you stop the cross, then you don't have that.
Yeah, fair enough.
But it's not entirely Bong's fault then. In that case, is it?
It was interesting to see Glenn's reaction. He should have completed after the they scored because where we were standing, and he was very angry. He was up for that game, Glenn.
Right.
For one reason or another, but obviously we probably all know the reasons why. But
he was pointing at the
defence. He did. And he got so angry. He was pointing at defence, obviously calling him a few expletives. He was really annoyed at that third goal. Really annoyed.
Absolutely.
Right. Okay. Escuedo makes it 3-2 with the best finish of the game.
The good goal of the game, wasn't it?
By Lacazia.
That was a lovely finish as well. I was fully expecting, because we were on the not the blind side, we're on the opposite side of it. So it's not as though we're behind the ball when he's shooting. So, you know, it's coming towards us. And you have no idea where it's going to be until it actually hits the net, if you see what I mean. I mean, if you're behind the line of the ball, you can see before it goes in that it's going in because the keeper's getting nowhere near it. With us, we have to wait. We know it's going past the keeper. Is it going to go past the post? No, it isn't. Shock horror.
It's about the only good thing he did all game. To be honest,
it's probably also his worst goal of the season.
No, he has.
And it was a good goal.
Yeah, it was. and then, well, there was changes at half-time. French Tony came on at half-time.
Had a good game as well, actually.
Yeah, I mean, he was hungry for it. And he showed again on Tuesday. Maybe the break was good for him. Maybe he managed to get his head together while he was off. Nice. But we'll talk about that in a minute. But I mean, we had the chances to get something out of it. I mean, ultimately, we came out disappointed.
Actually, Marcus, because you were closer to it. Tell us about Glenn's goal line clearance in the last minute.
Glenn's goal line. Well, because of the fact that we are down level with that the Sainsbury's end, we're all sort of boxed in on our happy 2000. It looks when he missed it. Because he missed a chance just before, didn't he, where the ball just sort of went just slightly wide a few minutes or, 10 minutes beforehand. I don't know how to describe it. I'm lost for words. He should have scored, and I have seen it back. And I normally, when Brighton lose, I don't bother watching it again because I just don't want to see it, especially to that lot. But it was on. The goals were on Sky Sports News, so I happened to sort of watch them again. And when you look at it from the camera angle that you saw it, how did he miss?
I've got no idea. Well, there was the other chance as well, which he just managed to just put wide.
That one, yeah.
It was ultimately frustrating. And, you know, I mean, Palace showed just how bad they are in the second half.
I thought Palace were very... I mean, we when we left our press box area, we obviously had to walk through with the Palace fans.
Oh, that was entertaining.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of them going, I'm glad we beat them, blah, blah, blah. But there's a lot of them were actually just honestly saying, obviously in amongst themselves, not knowing that there's some Brighton fans in amongst
them.
They really felt they dodged
really?
A bullet. They've said, we were awful that second half. How did we win that?
Well, that second half, we played very, very well. And Palace didn't get a sniff. And
I can't help feeling that both managers would have given their defences the mother of all rockets.
But ultimately, we did lose the game. But, mm-hmm. I mean, going into the week, I mean, you probably would have taken a draw at Palace.
Absolutely.
Thinking you're going to get beat by Spurs. So it evens itself out. But
no, it's still smarts when you lose to Palace. Don't get me wrong.
Even at tiddlywinks, it's still...
Yes, connect four, twister. Okay,
paper, right, scissors.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, well, you're listening to the Albion Raw here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and, of course, on our podcast. We are delighted, as ever, to be brought to you in association with oldfootballshirts.com. I'm just going to pass this beauty over.
So this part of the show, this is where Phil Shelley, our sponsor of Old Football Shirts, he chooses a shirt of the week, and he leaves us to guess what this is. So, Mike, can you describe this thing for us?
So, I've got in front of me, printed out beautifully, thank you very much.
Yes.
I've got a yellow shirt with very thin, what looks like navy blue stripes going down it, with the initials IDC written in the middle for the sponsor, Adidas logo, and a little sheriff badge.
Sheriff. So is this Dodge City Rovers or?
It is not Dodge City
Rovers. I've got a star above the sheriff's
base.
Yeah, they
have.
Could only indicate a.
There's a Europa League logo on the side there, but wasn't there a sheriff team that played Arsenal earlier in the season? Way back when.
Was it?
There was, I vaguely remember, either this last season or the season before, but yes.
It's a nice shirt.
So therefore, this is something like an Albanian team or something, isn't it?
So it's an Adidas shirt. It's gold in colour, pinstripe.
Yeah.
It's a really
with
nice
one
shirt.
Star above the thing, so obviously won the Renf Trophy once. So.
They're not that lucky.
Okay. But in terms of oldfootballshirts.com, it is a landmark shirt. And it goes, and here you go, this is your shirt of the week. And it is the 88,000th shirt posted to the site.
Wow. People.
88,000 shirts on Old Football Shirts. I mean, that's incredible, hey?
That's
amazing.
That's nearly a lot.
And this is the 2013 to 2014 home shirt of Moldovan side SC Sheriff Tiraspol from the Moldovan Divizii Naționale. Which is the top flight of football in that country.
It feels keyboard broken.
Yeah, probably.
This is the favourite bit of my show. I love this bit. Go on.
Rather bizarrely, they have a nickname.
The Sheriffs.
The Wasps.
Yeah, why wouldn't they? Why wouldn't they be called the Wasps?
Obviously.
They play at the Sheriff Stadium, which has a capacity of 12,746, and they were formed in 1996, and in 1997 adopted the name Sheriff after the company that sponsors them. And it has continued to do so ever since. Sheriff owns a chain of petrol stations, a chain of supermarkets, a TV channel, a publishers, a construction company, a Mercedes franchise, and an ad agency. Also, they own a distillery, several bakeries, a mobile phone network as well, and a five-star hotel.
I think they're their own little republic.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Yes, that's right.
I don't know if they've got a goldfish shop. In its short history, SC Sheriff have won the domestic league a record 16 times and have appeared in the Europa League, qualifying for the group stages 4 times. And in 2010, they made the qualifying rounds of the Champions League, but failed to make the group stages after being knocked out by Basel. Their current squad includes players from 11 countries, including... Oh, God. Jeremy Denuiger... who's a midfielder from Kurkau. They've got an Armenian winger called Aras Oblis And their most notable player is probably Vaza Tashkenavili.
He sounds Georgian.
He is a Georgian. A Georgian defender who made 360 appearances over 13 years before retiring in 2012. As for Brighton links, there are none that I can find, although it's likely that Jurgen Locadio once did a gig there.
Brilliant.
Do you think Phil wrote that while he was at the Players Awards do?
No, he didn't, because I got it before he went. But
Okay,
so notice board, Al.
I think we might as well turn to our good friend on the
right
here.
Exactly what I was going to say. Sod off, Al. notice board, Mr. Langridge. Anything happening soon?
Well, you know, we've got a few bits coming up.
Right.
I think there's a big game on its way.
Do tell.
Oh, we're playing Man United.
No, don't be silly. That's a 3-0 win to us. I'm not even worried about that.
What's happening on May the 11th, mate?
May the 11th is going to be a beautiful sunny Friday. Yeah. And followed up in the evening at about 7:45, there'll be a match being hosted.
Yes.
At Lewis Dripping Pan between...
The Pan Zero.
Yes, between the Brighton supporters and, of course, the Palace supporters.
Yes.
All to do with the REMF.
Okay, and how much is it? Obviously, we want everyone to come along, so how much is it to get in?
It's only a fiver.
Yeah.
Kids are free,
yeah,
if they're with their adults as well.
Yeah.
No doubt there'll be a raffle and there'll be a Peter Ward signed book probably to give away that somebody
another
will bring
one
along.
I'm sure we've
got an endless supply in the garage.
Peter Ward's?
Yeah.
A rare unsigned one.
Jackie just sends them over every now and again.
Yeah, they're worth more unsigned.
But currently, we are the trophy holders.
Yes.
Yes, that's right.
We would like to keep the trophies.
Yes. So come along and support and help the boys keep that trophy.
Correct.
Have we managed to locate a ringer yet?
You come along on Friday and I'll let you know.
Ooh.
What, this Friday?
You can go this Friday. It'll be a bit early, but you can go this Friday.
Obviously you are the Renf chairman. So tell us a little bit more about what's going on with Renf at the moment.
So, just lately, we've been looking over quite a lot of things that obviously the Renf do, and we've been going through figures and all the charities we've actually donated to. So, currently to date, it's about £250,000 that's been raised through
since
the Renf.
One.
Since day one.
Yep.
That's since the beginning, yep. So, there's been over 60 charities or groups that have benefited from that as well. And, of course, that goes all over the world. As we know, that isn't just here in Sussex. Mm-hmm. In the last 3 years alone, we've raised almost £100,000 as well. Now, we have still been donating. We've been giving a little bit away. But just recently, it's come to our knowledge that actually we could probably do with giving a little bit more away. So what we're looking at doing is sort of advertising it a little bit more. So, and we'd like to keep it, especially within the Sussex and South London, Croydon area, we'd like to give a lot back to those kind of groups at the moment. So if there are anybody, if there is anybody out there that thinks they could benefit from it, so we're talking about youth teams, we're not just talking about football groups, we're talking rugby, netball, softball, volleyballs, youth,
tiddlywinks, twister,
yep, sponsorship for whatever, nice board for your chess set, whatever. Absolutely. It is.
Yeah. Kaplunk.
Basically, Renf is looking to identify sort
always
of
lose
groups.
Yeah. Buckaroo.
Marcus's pole dance.
Operation.
No.
He's there not a youth.
Funny mode.
Back on track. Renf is looking to identify youth groups across Sussex and across South London to give donations to help. So, and it's specifically, what is the remit? Because there is a legal remit in order for Renf to be a charity. So how far can, if anyone's interested in actually thinking, yes, I know that this group might actually want to benefit, how far and wide can Renf donate
so
to?
So we're obviously looking at youth, so we're not looking at any adult groups. Disabilities.
Yes.
Or groups of less fortunate backgrounds as well. That's sort of our main core groups.
And anything to do with physical activity.
Correct.
So it
keep fit and
absolutely
well-being.
So it doesn't even necessarily need to be sports groups. I mean, anything, you know, if a climbing frame in a park needs, or, you know, I don't know what you call it, like after-school groups and things like that. Anything like that that's appropriate, community groups that are appropriate that have physical activities.
We've recently donated, actually, to a yoga club in Brighton, which has taken on
Kids do yoga.
Can schools apply?
The only thing with a school is it's not so much as a group, because obviously they have funding mainly elsewhere, usually either from state or private. So it becomes a very grey area. Mm. But if you are maybe an after-school club that operates within the premises that you need extra kit for or help with clothing or something like that, then something you're going down the right kind of road in terms of that, yeah.
Okay. Okay, so just to reiterate, so that's the Robert E. Memorial Fund game. It's at the Dripping Pan in Lewes.
And just also very quickly, you also organise a golf tournament?
I have. I've got my golf day coming up. Was my dad's, now mine. So 15th of June, Mid Sussex Golf Club. Again, it'll be a fantastic sunny day.
Of course.
I hope, not like thunder and lightning 2 years ago. Four balls are welcome. If you don't make up a four ball, then that's absolutely fine. We'll be able to put you with a couple of others.
That makes your eyes water, doesn't it, if you've got four balls?
Good morning. £60 a head.
Yeah.
Bacon rolls, tea and coffee on arrival, 18 holes of golf, three-course meal with coffee in the evening, also followed by trophies on every hole. We'll have a bit of a presentation. We usually do a raffle. We'll also have the standard auction as well, which I think so far commences with, which was very kindly donated to us by a gentleman. He won a competition to win Steve Sidwell's boots from when he scored the goal last year against Bristol from the halfway line, and they're signed as well.
Right.
Oh, wow. So that'll be going up for auction. There's also Mid Sussex Porsche have kindly donated a Porsche for the weekend, a Porsche Boxster. Oh. That will also be going in.
What could
go wrong? And then hopefully with a bit of luck, the club will kindly donate maybe a nice sponsored shirt or a ball as usual as well,
yes,
just to help us along. Right. So yeah, that's 15th of June, Mid Sussex Golf Club, £60 a person. If you need to know any more information, you can email me at mlangridge@live.co.uk.
And we'll give you regular reminders, as we always do. Anyway, right there, Tuesday night, Tottenham Hotspur came to the Amex. And, of course, it was Spurs who opened the Amex all those years ago.
I thought Eastbourne Borough did.
Oh, here we go. Gary Hart scored the first goal.
Eastbourne Borough.
But Gary, that's all he cares about.
Absolutely.
Forget about the Millennium Stadium. He was just glad he was a footballer.
Yeah, he hated it.
Like staying in hotels.
I had, because it was a home game, I had a sneaking feeling that we'd actually do quite well, especially as in the second half, even though we didn't score at Palace, we actually played a lot better. Yeah. So you think, well, at least they got, not their mojo back, but at least they got a bit of sort of, you know.
I think the players themselves probably realise they let themselves down at Palace.
Yeah. Okay, there were changes. I don't know whether you would class it as a surprise that Bruno came back in, but Knockhart was also came in for obviously Scalotto and Locardia dropping out, and it was good to have those two back in tandem again. And they really were back in tandem, weren't they?
Irrespective of whether you think they're Championship quality players or Premier League quality players, the point is that those two work together very well.
Yes, they do.
Yeah,
and it's probably they are their relationship on the pitch is actually greater than the sum of the parts that actually make up it.
I think it looked a lot more relaxed and controlled and back in your old ways as well. I really enjoyed seeing Bruno back out on the pitch.
Yeah.
I've got to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, Spurs made six changes as well ahead of their FA Cup final semi-final this weekend. But there's still room in their side for Harry Kane, Christian Eriksen, Son, and Hugo Lloris. I mean, it wasn't exactly a scratch side.
They made some changes in defence, I think, but their forward line was as good as it's ever been,
yes,
wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was frightening.
But the point is that we played a similar game that to how we did it up at Wembley, and of course, the difference between then and now is that. It's probably difficult for some people to see it, but we have actually moved 10 yards further forward.
And we didn't have Tomer Hemed leading the line as well, which also helped enormously that Glenn put in another...
Did you hear the gritted teeth there?
Another shift of brilliance. So there you go.
We played about 10... I thought that we played against Spurs the way that we played against Arsenal. It's just that obviously Spurs were a bit better because Arsenal's defence was was as bad as ours was against Palace probably. But so it was actually an improved performance, and they played at a higher tempo, knowing full well that, you know, we weren't, because we'd missed out on the points at Palace, you know, right, we've got to work that bit harder. But the point is we worked so hard in defence, they were working around us rather than through us. And, yeah, they had a few chances, but it's not as though they'd peppered the goal for that game, was it?
You made a good point on Twitter about most of Spurs' chances were when we were pointing the gun at our foot or something like that, because they came from an awful lot of... The back passes are starting to annoy me a little bit now, if I'm being honest. And I don't know whether it just seemed to be
Huddish,
it just seemed to be a bit of an overload of that going on over the last two or three games, and it needs to stop.
Yes. I mean, but someone should just yell at someone, turn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, Gross plays a delightful reverse ball for Knockart, who goes down dramatically. Replays show, though, that he was tripped and he also had his eye raked by Wanyama. So maybe, perhaps, if he hadn't gone down so dramatically, we might have got something.
Well, went, with his reputation. Down, to be honest, I think it went down naturally. I mean, when you get, you know, anyone goes that down at a hint, anyone goes a hint down a hint of a forearm smash. It was careless from the bloke. I don't think it was, you know, spying.
It was definitely a free kick, though, wasn't it? And it would have been in a
dangerous
position.
Yeah, the ref was looking at it.
But combination play. Bong had a shot on target.
Yeah, he did, didn't he? Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
But Anthony, I mean, we mentioned him earlier on that it's not been his greatest season. We all know that. We all know that
there's
been
issues.
It's a
step up, isn't it? It's a step up for everyone.
But he certainly looked at his feisty best, I would say, particularly in the first half, Marcus.
He did, I enjoyed his crouching behind the wall.
Crouching tiger, hidden knockout.
Yeah.
I don't recall this. What happened there?
It was the free kick. So when they had the free kick,
yes.
Knockout crouched behind our team. Behind all our players, and
behind
he got down
wall,
low.
So basically,
yeah.
So if
the wall they all jumped,
he's there.
So
he
you know,
was
like
there.
When Liverpool scored with the goal under the thing.
So he's like a draft excluder.
Pretty much. Crouched down one knee.
Yeah. A very
did it about
one.
Two or three times.
They didn't like it, did they? Spurs had a little bit of a moan up about that, but he was allowed to stay.
Okay, but I mean,
he's 10 yards away. The man.
But exactly. But Anthony, you know, it was showing his willingness to run. That's one thing that he had actually stopped doing. He wasn't actually running at the heart of defences again, and he was actually given the time and space to actually do it. And
I think he created his own time and space. Well, not like Doctor Who, but he created his own time and space to, you know, and he was giving Spurs something to think about. And he was doing the thing that we're used to him doing from the Championship. Of course, you know, he's up against sort of much higher class defenders. But I mean, you must have sort of enjoyed Mike his contribution.
I did, and I've got to be honest. I think the time that he's had off, I think, has actually done him the world of good. I think he seems to have taken a little bit of a step back, maybe composed himself, got his head straight again. And like you said, he's been out and he was running his socks off against Spurs, and he just seemed a little bit more composed. He's sort of that sort of red mist that he's been showing before he got his sending off is just it's sort of gone, and he seemed to look happier out there, seemed to be enjoying it a bit more, and I think that came across loads and the crowd recognised it as well. Mm-hmm. And it was really, really good to see.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, Gross shows that it's not only Proper that can produce a beautiful turn, and he pulls one back for Dale Stevens, who tries a clever back heel, but Lloris saves.
Okay. Thank you
good.
For that.
Moving
next one.
Spurs had a free kick, 25 yards out. Crouching tiger, hidden knockout, as we said.
Is this the one halfway through the half where Kyle just gave away a suicidal pass? And this is hang on. Is this the one that Dunk got his yellow card for? Is this the one you're talking about?
There was
about two or three of those.
Kyle
dropped Dunk into it for that one. Yeah. He ended up flattening the bloke and got a yellow card for it. But one. It was Knockart did it at the end of the half. You know, when sort of the injury time seemed to take about 10 minutes.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
So I mean, there was a couple of issues where some of these free kicks that Spurs were getting given on the edge of the box were
given
generous.
By us. Yeah.
Yeah.
By the ref.
The one that Dunk got booked for was what I thought was absolutely fair.
There was a couple that were just like, really? I mean, it was just frustrating.
Top six refereeing.
There was certainly an element of that. Sun forced Ryan into a great save in first half injury time where the crowd was baying for the whistle.
Brilliant save.
Yeah, the fourth
Brilliant
minute
save.
Of the second minute of injury time.
It was, what do we think of Spurs? I mean, can they challenge Man City, do you think? No. Not this season, clearly, but...
I thought they were off colour on Tuesday. I mean, you know, yes, we defended well and we made them play around us rather than through us because they could get frustrated and then their through ball would just go through to Ryan or it would be overhit. I mean, they had their chances, but even then, by the time someone got the ball near the edge of the area, there was about six... It was like playground football. There were six of them surrounding him, you know, trying to kick him and the ball and maybe... Yep. It was, you know...
Okay, well, we did get a second half, we early doors. We did give Spurs a goal, and it was basically everyone was caught ball. I hold my hands up and say I did think the ball went over the line, but clearly it hadn't. It spun back in. But I mean, Ryan was out of position. Bong just let it go. I mean, I'm a bit concerned about Bong at the moment. I think he's badly out of form, and I would like to see Suttner back at some point. But
discuss you two.
I still prefer Bong. I don't know why. I just do. Suttner, I think, is probably a bit slower. Probably better distribution wise. I think Bong's in the team because some of the teams that we've got.
It takes the best corner.
Absolutely, but I think Bong. I mean, wasn't there a stat recently that Bong's got the best of the Pele's not getting past him or something like that?
Oh,
it's one of the. It was one of these football sort of websites that are quite serious as well. It's not a jokey thing. So he's actually a good defender. He's a bit soft in the challenge sometimes, but I think it's because we come up against a lot of faster teams, and Suttner's not blessed with pace, and I think that's probably why he's in
the
team.
For their goal, we were pretty much sleepwalking. So I mean, it was a good job that we actually got back into the game very quickly. It was great play by Glenn Murray to put it through to Jose Escuedo, who he does like a dramatic fall, doesn't he?
It was a clumsy trip, but he didn't have to throw his arms up.
No. But no. And just as we thought Glenn was going to step up to take the penalty.
Evidently not now.
No.
Up steps the German, who you can always rely to take a penalty.
I was a little bit nervous, actually, not seeing Glenn step up. I don't usually say that, because going into that game, I actually wasn't that worried. A lot of my friends and people I know were a bit like, oh, we got Spurs, I'll be happy with a draw if we can get a draw. And I wasn't that bad. But when I saw Murray not coming up to that penalty spot, I got a little bit worried. And to me, a penalty should just be you put your boot through it, you put it in the back of the net, you make it count, and you walk away and you celebrate. I don't like all this sort of tippy-tappy, half-step jump and everything else. So when I saw him doing that, I got a bit nervous. Yeah. And he did get away with it. It was a good penalty, but I think it could have possibly gone wrong. But it went in the back of the net, and every goal counts. Absolutely. No such thing as a soft goal. It either goes in or it doesn't. It was in, it's done.
So in conclusion, a point gained or two lost?
A point gained, definitely.
No, I think we should have beaten them.
But I would put it
especially
in the fact
with that outrageous piece of refereeing at the end.
The way I looked at it was,
should have done it.
Yes, you're right, and that was a horrendous piece of refereeing. Yeah. But personally, we dropped 2 points against Huddersfield, so this is a point clawed back.
And just before we close off, Glenn Murray went off. I think that might be the last game he starts this season.
It could be. I think he's knackered. I think he's tired.
I think
he's 34. And I think he's,
And Ushua, he looked neat and tidy.
If we'd have beaten Huddersfield,
he looked fit.
He would have started against Palace just because. But I think Glenn's being flogged at the moment because Lucardia has admitted he can't head the ball. and our style of play is linked to a big front man. Yeah. And Glenn's been scoring goals, so you've got to keep him in the team.
Well, I think with Glenn, as it stands at the moment, if you're playing in a team that's attacking and is probably in a championship team, for argument's sake, or a team at the top of this league, then Glenn would work a lot better at the moment. But when we're under the cosh a lot, like we are at the moment, and you need an outlet, Glenn will hold the ball up, but he just can't run the channels anymore.
No, absolutely.
And as soon as Ojoa came on, I mean, he's not exactly the quickest, but he was a lot quicker.
Neat than Glenn.
He's a bit younger, isn't he?
And he also doesn't have a 50p head.
What amused me, though, is even at Palace, just Ojoa and Murray up front for a brief moment, you just think, wow, what's
it was a show who set up Murray's last-minute job.
It was, yeah.
But, I mean, that is all we've got time for this week. So thank you very much to listening to this week's Albion Raw. Thank you to Marcus Hancock. Thank you to Alan Wares. Thank you to Mike Langridge. Thank you to Ralph Ganesh. I've been Ailey Pack, and we'll be back next week. And we'll see you then. Many thanks. Bye. She's